This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Rabbit, Great and Terrible, by Nelson Chirita, narrated by Gary Furlong. Chapter 1. The Heroic White Mage. Fenton's shoulders ached. That wasn't a surprise. It was harvest time and the whole village was out in the fields from dawn to dusk. He was sure it was going to be at least another week before all the crops were in. Once that was done, though, they would have the harvest festival. That was always a fun time. Connor would play on his string picker, everyone would eat fresh picked corn and roast mutton, and since he was 15, a full-grown man, he'd get to have some corn whiskey right out in the open for once. Best of all, he would get to dance with Maggie. She was the prettiest girl in the whole village, especially when she trimmed that hair coming out of her mole. He was thinking about asking her to marry him at the festival. She was 17, after all, and people were beginning to talk. They said if she wasn't careful, she was going to end up an old maid. Fenton really loved her and wanted to spend the rest of his life with Maggie. Plus, she'd already promised that once they were married, she would let him do it sheep style with her as much as he wanted. Still, marriage was a big step. He was a young man, and not sure if he was ready to be tied down yet. He knew he would probably never leave the village, no one ever did. But he couldn't help but think about what a big world it was. It might be fun to go out on an adventure, have a little excitement. He'd heard lots of stories about adventurers who fought monsters and found treasures and rescued beautiful princesses. How hard could it be? He just needed to learn how to swing a sword and then... Right then he heard old Lady Bardwick shouting that a white mage and a woman were coming down the road. "Isn't it a little early for her to be drinking corn whiskey?" he muttered. The last time it had been a herd of werbels stampeding towards her. The time before that, it had been an air elemental stealing her apples. Well, he and everyone else in the village would just have to go and calm her down. Otherwise, she would spend the rest of the day shouting about a white mage pestering her over the dichotomy of good and evil or something. As he and the rest of the village headed to her house to tell her everything was fine, he spotted Maggie with her paw. She sent him a smile and a quick wave of her chubby hand. When he got to old Lady Bartwick's hut, he was not surprised to see her standing in front of her home with a broom in her hand. She was waving it over her head like a club. What did catch him and everyone else by surprise was that there really was a white mage and a woman coming up the road. Everyone knew about the white mages. They came from a faraway land called Avalon. They all had yellow hair and yellow eyes, and could use incredibly powerful magics. They could call down lightning and fire, turn lead to gold, and they rode the backs of dragons. They always helped people and killed monsters. Vedric the wool merchant said he talked to one when he was in the city of Lexhaven many years ago. Of course, he also said he'd met a half-elven fire dancer and a paladin on a holy quest and a centaur named Evan, who sold special mushrooms. But an even more amazing sight was the woman walking beside the white mage. She had fiery red hair, eyes the color of summer twilight, the graceful movement of a high-born lady, and huge firm tits the size of ripe cantaloupes. If this was what women from Avalon looked like, he was going to find this place. The two of them stopped in front of the villagers. The white mage had an eager grin on his face. The big-titted redhead had a much more serious expression. He noted that the woman was a head taller than the wizard. The wizard took a step forward and spread his hands out. "Greetings! I am Master Waldo Rabbit, a white mage of Avalon. I wish you unity, justice, and peace. This is my wife, Alice Rabbit." The gorgeous woman, Alice, performed a curtsy that gave Fenton a clear view of the top of her breasts. "I am pleased to meet you all." As soon as she stood back up, the white mage spoke again. "I'm afraid I have some terrible news for you. I'm here because I've been chasing a great monster, an ogre. Of course, being a white mage, I intend to kill it for you. However, it's a very, very dangerous beast. While I will definitely slay it with my incredible magics, I can't guarantee there won't be any casualties. Some of you will probably be killed, so for your own safety, you should run away immediately, without stopping to take your valuables first." Beautiful Alice rubbed a hand over her face as he said this. Fenton and his neighbors looked at one another. The idea of an ogre attack was hard to believe, There hadn't even been any goblins in the area for at least 7 or 8 years. No one said anything out loud. Who wanted to tell a magic user he was wrong? Old Lady Bartwick was the one who spoke up.
"Ain't no ogres hereabouts. We got werbels, though. Lots of 'em. They live in the cornfields, always sneaking into my hut and stealing my slippers. Could you do something about 'em?"
"You have werbels?" The white mage sounded interested. "Their fur is a key ingredient in strength potions. Are they purple and gold, or green and brown?"
"They're black as night, almost so you can't see 'em."
"Black? Are you sure? Maybe they were carnivorous mole rats." Alice coughed into her hand. "Darling, I think you're getting a bit off track here. There's a dangerous ogre coming, remember?"
"Ah, right," the white mage said.
"All of you should get as far away as you can, as quick as you can. The ogre could attack at any moment."
Fenton and the other villagers all stared back at him and remained where they were. The white mage then frowned and turned to look over at the cornfields.
"I said," he spoke in a louder voice, "the ogre could attack at any moment."
And perhaps hearing him, there was a sudden blood-curdling roar. Stomping out of the corn was a green beast at least 8 feet tall. Its skin was green as alfalfa. 2 yellow tusks jutted up out of its jaw. Its arms, legs, and chest were as thick and hard as an old oak. Except for some burlap tied around its waist, it was naked. The beast pounded its chest and roared loud enough to make the ground shake.
"Gronk smash! Gronk eat you all! Tear off skin and eat! Yum!"
The white mage stepped towards him and pulled a wand from out of his robe.
"No, foul monster! You may eat one or two, but I, Waldo Rabbit, will stop you! Pyro!"
A stream of fire shot out of the wand. It passed over the monster's head and set part of the field on fire. The ogre screamed in fury.
"Gronk no afraid of pretty man in white."
The monster lowered his head and charged towards them.
"Pyro!"
Another stream of fire missed the monster as it made the ground shake. That was when Fenton turned and ran as fast as he could. He was not alone. Everyone took off down the road and away from the monster in blind panic. As he ran, he suddenly realized he had wet himself. It was at that precise moment that he decided to marry Maggie and to never, ever, ever, ever leave his village. Gronk was running between the huts as Waldo cast more fire spells.
"All right, they're gone. You can stop now," Alice finally called out.
"Foul beast, I will—"
Waldo stopped in mid-sentence and looked back at Alice.
"Are you certain?"
"Yes,"
Alice sighed.
Gronk stopped his rampage.
"How did you like my performance, master?"
the ogre asked in a lisping voice that was nothing like the one he'd used only a moment ago.
"Was it scary enough?"
Waldo nodded and put his wand away.
"You did wonderfully, Gronk, like always."
"Joy!"
The big ogre skipped over to his master's side. Alice was rubbing her temples.
"Do we really have to keep doing this?
Are you willing to charm people and let me rob them that way?"
Waldo asked.
"No,"
Alice replied instantly.
"Then we have to keep doing this. It not only allows me to steal from these villagers, it also builds up my reputation. Dozens of villages will talk of the mighty Waldo Rabbit who drove off a monstrous ogre."
"But never managed to kill it,"
Alice pointed out.
"Driving it away is still impressive."
"We could pretend you killed me. I could do a death scene."
Gronk switched to his original voice and slammed both hands to his heart as he staggered from side to side.
"No, pretty man in white kill Gronk. Gronk die."
He fell over with a loud thud. Both legs shot into the air and gave a dramatic shake before dropping back down. Waldo clapped his hands.
"Thank you, Gronk, but I think just driving you away is good enough."
"Whatever you say, master,"
Gronk replied with a lisp and got back on his feet.
"Darling,"
Alice came over to stand beside her husband,
"I really think we should stop doing this. We already have plenty of money."
She patted the bulging purse tied to her hip.
"And we draw a lot of attention. We can never have enough coin, and the more famous I become, the better."
"But what if we draw the wrong kind of attention?"
she asked. Your grandfather hasn't bothered us in a while. Never mind any other people who might be chasing us.
It had been 3 months since they'd left Lothus. In that time, Waldo's grandfather had not contacted him, and no more summoned creatures had spied on them. There had also been no sign of any pursuit by Duke Griffinheart. They had traveled through 7 different countries, always heading north.
I've told you, my grandfather will never stop chasing me. The dead never tire, and I doubt he will suddenly lose interest in eating my heart. But they don't have the same sense of urgency as the living do. At some point, he will come after me again, regardless of what I do. As for other people, I don't...
Waldo paused and looked over his shoulder. There was an obvious expression of annoyance. He waved a hand.
Nunc.
Kleptus Daring suddenly popped into existence 12 feet behind Waldo. He was in mid-sneak, moving silently on the balls of his feet. As soon as he appeared, he settled back on his heels and gave a laugh.
You caught me this time.
And every time, Waldo said with irritation. I've told you, invisibility only works with mundanes. It can't fool mages. We can sense magic.
Why do you keep trying to sneak up on him anyway? Alice asked.
It's just practice, that's all. A good thief needs to keep his skills sharp as daggers.
Alice narrowed her eyes.
It wouldn't be anything else, would it?
No.
It's just practice. You're lying, I can tell.
He smiled.
What makes you think so?
Your mouth is open and words are coming out.
Have you finished searching this place? Waldo asked. When they put on their performance, the entire audience would not always run away. A few brave souls occasionally stayed to try and fight the terrifying ogre. On those occasions, an invisible kleptus would go through the village and take anything of value.
Yes, I'm afraid it's not much.
From his cloak, he produced a sack and tossed it to Waldo. About 600 copper coins, a few bronze bracelets, an amber brooch and 3 iron daggers. That's all.
Waldo opened the sack and looked over the contents.
Nothing else?
Nope. It's about what you expect from such a small place.
Waldo looked at him.
You certain this is everything?
Yes, believe me.
Waldo stared at him for a moment.
Gronk.
Sure thing, master.
The ogre strolled over to the thief, who put his hands up and began to backpedal.
Hey, we don't need to do this again. I put everything I found in the sack. May Wotal strike me blind if I lie.
Don't be nervous, sweetheart. I'll be gentle.
Gronk grabbed him by both ankles and proceeded to shake him like a rag doll. As he did so, a total of 5 silver coins came flying out. When nothing else shook loose, Gronk put him down. Alice collected the silver and put the coins in her purse.
You never learn, she muttered.
All right, well, let's get going, Waldo said. Together, the 4 of them left the village and continued north. That evening they made camp off in the woods. Waldo and Alice shared a tent. Kleptus had his own, and Gronk slept out on the grass beneath the stars. Alice and Waldo were both in their small clothes lying on their blankets. Alice turned to him and took a deep breath.
Darling, there's something I need to say to you.
Let me guess, you want to do Local Lord and the Innocent Farm Girl?
No, not that.
You want to do Dread Pirate Captain and the Innocent Maiden? She shook her head.
No.
Waldo rubbed his chin.
If you want to do Slave Master and the Innocent New Slave Girl, I'm feeling a little tired. Maybe we could do that tomorrow.
No, it's nothing about that.
I wanted to talk to you about Kleptus. I don't trust him.
Well, of course you don't. He's a thief, after all. Only a fool would trust him. After all, trust is...
A dagger pointed at your own heart, Alice said. Yes, yes, you really love all your sayings. But that's my point. I don't trust him. He hasn't forgiven you for what happened back in Norwich. I really think he would stab you in the back if he could.
Oh, I don't doubt it, Waldo agreed. That's why I carved the Morio seal in his chest.
A seal that's fake, she reminded him. If he ever finds out the truth, he really will try and kill you.
I don't doubt it.
Then wouldn't it be a good idea to get rid of him?
You mean kill him? Waldo asked in surprise. Alice nodded.
I don't usually believe in murder, but in his case, I'd be okay with it. Normally I would say let him go, but I wouldn't be able to sleep at night knowing he was out there. He really hates you, darling.
I know,
but that's no reason to get rid of someone who is an asset. My mother's familiar hates her like poison, and she knows it. But a vampire is too valuable to just throw away. Kleptus is a good thief, and I can use him, especially where we'll be going.
But he's dangerous.
He'd be a pretty poor thief if he wasn't.
And what happens if he finds out the steel's not real?
How could he? He doesn't know how magic works. He'll believe whatever I tell him.
But what happens if he does figure it out someday?
Then at that point, you have my permission to kill him.
Wonderful. I hope it won't be too late.
Well, if that's all...
He yawned.
I'm ready to go to sleep.
Good night, Alice.
Actually...
She was pressing her fingers together. Waldo sighed. He could guess what was coming. Yes. Her eyes avoided his.
Pirate Captain,
Alice blurted out. He took a deep breath and readied himself.
Arr, come here, wench. The dread pirate Waldo has need of ye.
Oh, please, no. I'm an innocent and helpless maiden.
Arr.
He pushed her down onto the blankets. Out in the night, Alice's cries could be heard loud and clear.
Yes, yes, take me, my captain, take me.
Lying in the grass, Gronk chuckled.
Well, I was thinking they were going to do Lonely Shepherd and Innocent You.
Chapter 2. A Little Skeleton on the Map. The following morning, Waldo went off by himself. He sat down beneath a large oak and began to pull various pieces of parchment from out of his pockets. These were maps. He'd acquired them during his travels. Many covered only a single country or part of one. Most lacked much detail. They showed the main cities and towns and the roads in between. A major river might appear, especially if there was only a single crossing point for it. Details such as mountain ranges, forests, swamps, and deserts were usually neglected. More importantly, the areas of wilderness where monsters roamed were also usually left off. This made travel even more dangerous than it already was. Accurate maps, even the inaccurate ones, were a precious commodity. Most were normally drawn up by locals, and could only be acquired traveling through that specific area. Typically, only merchants had maps covering many lands, and they often added important details themselves, such as an unmarked road, a minor river crossing, or a wood infested with goblins. Even generals leading invading armies often went in blind, relying on locals and their own scouts to figure out the lay of the land. Back home in Castle Corpse Lover, there had been thousands of maps available, covering almost the whole of the Shattered Lands. Some were hundreds of years old, displaying countries that no longer existed, and cities long ago sacked and left to ruin. There had even been grand atlases that showed you the entire world in a single glance. There was the Storm Sea, the Western Sea, the Inner Sea, and the Frozen Sea. A blob marked the location of Avalon, and all of Ostergaard was a blank space with a single notation. Here there be monsters. The Mouth, the Silk Road, Blackened Amora, the Rio Optimo, the Great Southern Desert, the Far Isles, and the Salt Plains were all marked. But even the atlases couldn't show you where Ostergaard ended, or what was beyond the edge of the Western Sea. 2,000 years after the Shattering, parts of the world remained a mystery. When he'd originally set out, he'd been given maps of every country neighboring Alteroth. He'd taken those maps completely for granted, in the same way he had all the spells, potion recipes, and seals in his spellbook. It was only after losing them that he truly appreciated their value. Most of the maps he had now were of countries he'd already passed through. The one he began to unfold was different from all the rest. It was drawn on a large section of sheepskin. Instead of showing just one country, it revealed the cities, towns, castles, roads, and rivers of 15 nations. The center point of the map was the Gold City, and it showed every route to it from every direction. There were even useful notations to help better understand the different regions. It was a genuine treasure. It had originally belonged to a merchant back in Kaspar. Waldo had offered to buy it or buy a copy, but the merchant had refused to sell. The information was too valuable to part with. So Waldo had sent Kleptus in to steal it, along with a small fortune in gold and silver. And that was the first time he'd used the invisibility spell on the thief. The successful theft had been one of the highlights of his quest so far. It was also proof that illusion magic had its uses. He was looking over this particular map when Alice came up to him.
Breakfast is ready, darling.
Waldo gave an absent nod. I'll be there in a bit. Standing over him, she peered down.
Have you decided where we're going?
Yes. He tapped the exact center of the sheepskin.
Oh, we're going to Torikai?
Alice asked excitedly.
I've heard stories about it from the merchants. The Gold City, surrounded by a shining wall of pure gold and ruled by a wise and beautiful queen. Everyone says it's the greatest city in the world.
Second? Alter's obviously the greatest. It may only be third or fourth. I'm sure Trezubon and Venezia would try and lay claim to the title as well.
Well, I'm still eager to go and see it. They say you can buy anything there. Will we get to do some shopping? We can actually put some of our coins to use.
He glanced up at her.
If you want to make a few purchases, that's fine, I suppose. The reason we're going there is to gather information.
About what, darling? To begin with, magic and spells. Since it turns out I have a talent in illusion magic, I want to try and acquire more spells in it. Alice gave a supportive nod and patted him on the shoulder.
I've always known you are very talented with your magic, darling.
That's not quite what I mean, Waldo told her. There are 8 schools of magic. Most mages have minor access to 7 or at least 6 of them. Having access means you can learn to cast the lesser magics of that school. But to use the more powerful spells, the deeper magics, requires you to have a talent in the school.
She frowned slightly. I'm not sure I follow.
Waldo took his wand out from one of the pockets sewn into his robes. He pointed it at a tree about 20 feet away.
Venti.
He felt a trickle of mana slip out of him and into the wand. A gust of wind struck the tree hard enough to shake branches and send some leaves flying.
That was a basic spell from the elemental school of magic.
Waldo slid the wand back into the pocket.
I was able to do that because I have access to elemental magic. Now, if I had a talent for the elemental school, I could do things like fly or bring down a tornado.
Given the number of wind spells he had in his spellbook, that lack was actually a great shame.
When I was growing up, Waldo continued, I had trouble making even basic spells work, outside of healing and protective magics. Everyone assumed my only talent was in healing. But invisibility is a deeper magic of the illusion school. That means I have a talent in illusion and can use the more advanced spells.
That's wonderful, darling.
He could feel her exuberance through their bond.
That proves how amazing you are.
Waldo let out a despondent sigh. Alice blinked.
Why are you feeling depressed?
Since she could also sense his emotions, Waldo knew there was no point in trying to deny it.
All mages can sense magic. When Roger created that false dragon, I knew immediately what it was, because I could sense the magic that formed it. No illusion will ever fool a mage, which means they're only valuable when dealing with mundanes. So illusion is considered the weakest and least valuable of all the schools of magic.
And the only one even more worthless than healing, Waldo thought. The dark powers are laughing at me again. Alice shook her head.
But, darling, the world is full of people who don't use magic. How many times have you made Kleptus invisible? He's never been caught, and I know he loves when you use it on him. I think it's great that you can do it.
Well, it has its uses, Waldo admitted.
Part of the reason we're going to Torikai is for me to try and get more spells. There's a guild there that specializes in illusion. If I can get access to their library, I can acquire a lot of new spells.
That's fantastic, darling.
I'm also hoping to get information on finding a dragon.
He felt her enthusiasm sputter.
Oh, so we're still doing that?
Waldo lifted an eyebrow.
I told you and Gronk that acquiring a dragon's egg or a dragon was a part of my quest. I can't go home without one.
Yes, dear, I remember. But you haven't mentioned it for a while. I was sort of hoping we could put it off and just travel from place to place for a time.
I didn't mention it because I was more worried about avoiding my grandfather and any party sent out by Duke Griffinheart. Besides, a dragon's lair isn't easy to find. We weren't likely to just stumble across one.
Terrasa be praised.
She drew a circle over her heart.
Information is the most precious thing there is, Waldo told her. Even a place like Torikai may not have any leads, but it's worth checking. At the very least, I can acquire more magic,
and I'm sure there will be other opportunities there as well. Alice narrowed her eyes. These opportunities wouldn't involve stealing, would they? That's a silly question. Of course they would. So we're going to one of the great cities of the world to commit crimes that could get us imprisoned or even killed.
That's right.
Didn't you learn anything from what happened in Norwich?
Of course I did. This time I won't ask you to charm anyone.
She sent him a tart frown.
Right, because that was the big mistake. Not deciding to steal a duke's magical sword and sneak out in the middle of the night.
I'm glad you agree. Alice shook her head and gave a half-muffled groan.
Looking over the map, I think I found the best route to get to Torikai.
He stabbed a finger at a crossroads near the bottom right corner.
We're near here, where the Sunflower Road crosses the Ramshorn Road. We'll take the Sunflower north to Hampton's Crossing, then go west a bit on the Twisting Trail until we reach Kurgard. Then we head north again on Kingston Pike, and then go through the Valley of Certain Death, which will then put us on the Gold Road, which takes us straight...
Wait a bit! We go through a place called the Valley of Certain Death?
That's right. He tapped a point on the map. It's the only connection between Kingston Pike and the Gold Road.
Alice took a close look.
Darling, why is there a little skeleton drawn there?
That just means there are some undead, that's all.
That's all? You want to go through a place called the Valley of Certain Death, where there are undead, just so we can get on the Gold Road?
It's really not that big a deal, Alice. It's marked with only one skeleton. That means it's a minor infestation. Probably just a couple hundred skeletons and walking corpses with maybe a handful of zombies mixed in. 300 at the very most. Any more than that and the map would have two skeletons with swords, or maybe a little ghost.
And you think passing through a place with hundreds of undead is a small thing?
He nodded. We had more than that guarding the castle back home.
Well, that makes me eager to visit, she muttered under her breath.
Alice looked more closely at the map.
Darling, couldn't we just go southwest out of Kurgard on the Tulip Way until we get to Pig Slaughter Junction and get on the Gold Road there?
Waldo shook his head.
No. Why not? Look how far out of the way it is. Going that way would add at least a week to our trip and is inconvenient. Do you want to make things harder for us?
When she smacked him on the back of his head, he had no idea why she did it. Ultimately, they agreed on the larger route. Chapter 3 The Great Rabbit. The caravan made its stop for the night. The 20 wagons pulled off the Gold Road and formed a circle, with all the horses on the inside. A cook fire was started, and the cook began working on the evening meal. They had set out from Pig Slaughter Junction early that morning, and had covered a good 15 miles. They were at least returning home to Torikai, the wagons loaded down with barrels of ale and whiskey, bolts of cloth, smoked mutton, and salt pork. Along with the salt pork, they had also picked up 4 travelers at the junction. Normally, caravans didn't permit passengers to simply hop on, but one of them had been a white mage, and you didn't refuse a white mage when he asked for a favor. Darren Malasar was the captain of the 8 guards hired to protect the caravan. He'd worked as a guard for hire for more than 10 years. He was good with a sword, and when he talked, the others listened. Being a guard for hire didn't really pay that well. For 2 months with his caravan, he would get a total of 10 silver marks. It was not much, but would be enough to see him through the winter at least. Being a gladiator could earn a lot more, but only if you were really good at it. Most gladiators never even made it to their 3rd match. What he would have really liked would have been to join the Gold Guard. Those arrogant asses not only got great pay and quarters inside the wall, but their work was easy. They never had to worry about bandits or packs of wild goblins attacking in the middle of the night. They were just policemen in shiny armor who got to lord it over everyone. Darren knew there was no chance he would ever get to be one. He was a commoner, a rat, born and raised in the rat's nest. To get into the Gold Guard, you had to know someone, be some lord's or rich merchant's son or nephew. Being able to handle yourself in a fight wasn't what mattered. He hadn't popped out of the right womb, and so wasn't qualified. As he ate his stew, Darren kept looking over to the 4 newcomers. They sat a little apart from everyone else.
He was hardly the only one who kept looking in their direction. They were a very colorful group. There was, of course, the white mage in his snow-white robes and with yellow hair and eyes. Darren had spotted a white mage in the rat's nest a few times. He had never actually spoken to one. They were people to be respected and feared. Beside him was a woman with fiery hair and a body that would have earned a fortune in one of the pleasure houses inside the wall. It made sense that a white mage would have a woman like that for a wife. Then there was the barbarian woman, who was covered in burn scars and carried a sword with a faint glow to it. She was repulsive and ungainly. When she walked, he was reminded of an ox trampling whatever got in its path. Her movements lacked the grace of a trained warrior, but he suspected she was more dangerous than she appeared. Last, it was the dark-haired fellow in the gray cloak. Nothing about him really stood out, except that he was missing a finger. Compared to the rest of the group, he was easy to forget about. It was very strange, seeing a white mage just sitting there, eating. From all the stories, you never expected them to do anything so ordinary. They fought monsters, advised rulers, gave food to the poor, wandered all over the world, and never asked for payment. Even for someone who came from a place where magic was fairly common, white mages were something different. They seemed more like characters from a story than the magic users he'd seen back home. They seemed much too good for this greedy and selfish world. Despite traveling together for a day, Darren hadn't spoken to the white mage or any of his party. He didn't think any of the wagon drivers or guards had. They'd kept to themselves. The only person he had seen talk to them was Horace Ryson, the caravan master. And even then, the talk had been brief. Probably just Horace wanting to make sure everything was all right. Most people would sooner have a pack of goblins chasing them than anger a white mage. Darren would keep a safe distance and not speak to him unless spoken to first. He would take first watch tonight, so he hurriedly finished his meal and got ready to turn in his plate. That was when the white mage suddenly stood up and walked over to the cook fire. Darren and everyone else stopped to stare at him as he stepped up to the fire and the center of their camp. His hood was down, and the firelight bathed his face. His hair and eyes seemed to shine. "I wonder if I might speak to you all about something rather important," he said. Darren had no idea what this could be about, but if it was coming from a white mage, then it had to be something serious. All eyes were drawn to him, the many small conversations died away, and he was the only focus.
"Please, Master Rabbit," Horace called out. "Feel free to tell us whatever you wish to."
The white mage gave the caravan master a nod, and then continued. "I would like to talk to all of you about the gods." A couple days earlier. "What's the secret to lying?" Waldo asked.
"What?"
Kleptus asked with annoyance. They were on the road headed to a town called Pig Slaughter Junction, where they would get on the gold road for Torukai.
"What's the secret to lying?" Waldo asked again. "I want to know."
"Darling," Alice said with a scowl, "why are you asking him something like that?"
"Lying is a very important skill, one I am desperately in need of practice in. Since we're going to spend some time in a major city while I conduct my research, it would also seem an opportune moment to also work on my abilities in deception."
"Seems to me," Kleptus said, "you already know plenty. You're traveling with a couple of monsters and a thief. You steal people blind when pretending to rescue them. I'd say that makes you a pretty damn good liar right there."
Waldo waved that away. "It's easy to trick ignorant peasants, but in Torukai I'll be dealing with mages. They'll probably be harder to fool. I know I'm not a very convincing liar, and I want to work at it. You seem to know what you're doing. Give me some suggestions."
"Darling, you don't need to worry about that. You are fine the way you are."
"But it's a really important skill."
Alice shook her head.
"No, it's not. I never lie, and it's never been a problem for me."
Kleptus let loose a loud laugh. Alice turned to stare daggers at the man.
"You have something to say, thief?"
"Only that every beautiful woman lies, and beautiful barmaids are the queens of deception."
"Maybe the girls you knew were like that, but I never was."
"Oh, really? You never told some fat, homely old grandfather that he was handsome? Never smiled and laughed and encouraged a man to just earn a tip? Never pretended to be interested in some story you'd already heard 100 times?"
Alice crossed her arms. All that's called being polite. It's a barmaid's job to make the customer feel welcome. Of course I'll be sweet to them.
A lie is a lie, no matter how sweet it tastes, Klepta said.
I've had plenty of ladies thank me with tears in their eyes just for telling them they were my one and only.
Alice scowled at him.
That's horrible.
Kleptis grinned back at her.
Why? I was just being sweet.
Alice turned to her husband.
Is this the kind of man you want to be?
Yes,
Waldo answered immediately. He faced Kleptis.
How do I lie well?
It's not really that hard. There are just two secrets to it. Make the lie something you know the person wants to believe, and make yourself believe it too.
I don't understand, Waldo said.
Look, it's simple. Most people want to believe good things. Women want to hear they're beautiful and special. Men want to hear they're strong and smart. If you tell someone something they want to believe, they're going to most of the time. People will argue and fight if you call their baby ugly, even if the kid could scare away a hungry rat. No one's going to think twice if you say that same brat is a fairy in disguise.
Fairies don't disguise themselves as babies, Waldo told him. That's a common misconception. They just mind-control the parents in order to steal the babies to use as slaves.
Is that true?
Alice asked.
It is, Waldo answered.
Kleptis shook his head.
It wasn't my point. Just when you lie to someone, try and make it part of something they want to hear. The other thing is, you have to believe it yourself. No matter what it is you're saying, you must make yourself believe it. It has to be as real to you as your own name. Think of it like telling a good story. Whether or not the brave knight really did slay the dragon, you have to believe he did, or your words sound hollow. Make every word you say as certain as your own name.
First name or last, Waldo thought.
I'm not sure I understand.
Oh, I'm sure you'll figure it out, Klepta said with a friendly manner and broad smile.
You're a smart man, the smartest I've ever met by miles and miles. And even though you killed all my friends, dragged me from my home, and had my finger bitten off, I'm still glad to have met you. You're the best there is, and I know you'll figure out anything you set your mind to.
Waldo couldn't help but smile back.
Well, thank you, Kleptis. I'm glad to know you appreciate me.
Kleptis, Alice, and Bell all stopped walking to stare at him.
What?
Waldo asked. Alice sighed.
Maybe you should learn a little bit about lying after all. At least enough to see it in others.
I would like to talk to all of you about the gods. People stirred to look at one another. Derrim wasn't sure what to think. Outside of the holy days or times when he was in trouble, he didn't worry too much about the gods. His life was difficult. He had to work hard just to keep food on the table. The priests were always wanting offerings and donations he couldn't afford. They warned about the consequences of the gods' displeasure and tried to claim anything good that happened was a result of their favor. He visited the temples on the solstices and equinoxes. He made an offering when he was sick or about to leave on a job. The rest of the time, he didn't really give the gods much thought. The white mage placed both his hands, palm out, behind his head, as though forming a pair of rabbit ears.
"The love of rabbit unto you," he said.
Darren and everyone else sat there in confused silence. Nonplussed, the white mage put his hands down and began to speak to them.
"As I'm sure you all know, there are many gods in the world. There are at least 12 major religions, each with its own pantheon. The Northmen follow Tivor, the storm god. The Seljuk believe in Deus. Around the Inner Sea they still worship Kronos, the old Amoran gods. And there is Adoval, Seprith, Kor-Amur, the Dark Powers, and still others. Leaving all the major deities out of it, how many local gods are there?
Every country has a few. A god for this river or that mountain, a god for the harvest, a god for childbirth, a god for marriage, a god of the hearth, a god for war, and a god for peace.
Do you think they're all real? Every one of them? Do you think they listen? That they care?
Hearing those questions, Darren suddenly realized he'd never really thought about any of that. He'd been brought up to believe in the gods of the realm. He'd been told the same stories as everyone else and just accepted them.
I would like to talk to you about the god my people worship, the god of Avalon and of all white mages. He is a god of unity, justice, and peace, who wants to make all men and women a part of his herd. For he is the great rabbit, and his name is Kukukachu.
Darren had never heard of him, but that was not surprising. Everything about the white mages was shrouded in mystery.
Let me tell you about Kukukachu's love for all of you, and his plans to bring all into his herd.
The master spoke for about an hour, and the more Darren heard about this god and his ways, the more interested he became. When the sermon finally ended, Narvin had to come over and remind him about his shift. As Darren started his watch, he wondered if the master would speak again. Darren really wanted to hear more about the great rabbit. After speaking, Waldo went back over to his group. Bell had already set up their tents inside the wagon circle. As everyone else drifted off to sleep inside their wagons or on blankets spread out on the grass, the four of them were alone and able to talk.
"What was that?" Alice asked.
"I believe the priests call it a sermon," Waldo told her.
"I know that, darling, but why did you suddenly feel the need to talk about your religious beliefs? And a rabbit? I thought you said your gods were..."
She glanced at Kleptus.
"Something else."
"Never knew you were so religious," Kleptus remarked.
"I liked it, master," Bell said. "Especially the part about how your god shaped the world out of his poo."
"Well, every religion needs a creation story," Waldo said.
"Darling, there's something I don't understand. Don't you believe in other gods?"
Sometimes having to keep Kleptus ignorant of who Waldo really was could be inconvenient. She was, of course, referring to the dark powers, who Waldo often complained were laughing at him. Waldo nodded.
"That's right."
"Then, does that mean Kukukachu is one of those gods?"
"No. We don't actually know their names, their number, if they're male or female, or really much of anything about them. We only know they have power and are willing to bargain."
"Never heard of any gods like that," Kleptus said.
"In Avalon, our ways are strange and enigmatic," Waldo said.
That was what he usually said when there was something he didn't want to explain to the thief. Kleptus simply nodded. Everyone knew white mages had secrets like dogs had fleas. The color drained from Alice's cheeks.
"Does that mean you've started worshipping a different god? Aren't you afraid your gods will punish you? They could curse you with leprosy, or cover you in boils, or, even worse, make you impotent."
"You don't need to worry," he assured her. "They're greedy gods, not jealous ones. Besides, the great rabbit isn't real. At least, I don't think he is." The corners of her lips slowly turned downwards.
"Wait, are you saying you made him up? That you made up everything?"
"That's right."
But I think people actually believed you."
"Good. I'd feel silly if they didn't."
"Why would you do that?"
Waldo shrugged his shoulders.
"To practice my lying. It's a skill like any other and needs to be worked on. Since we'll be traveling together for at least a week, I thought I'd take advantage of the opportunity and the captive audience." "So, you invented a god just to practice lying?"
"Yes."
"And a religion?"
"Naturally. The two go hand in hand. It's not that difficult. You should try it sometime." Alice grabbed a length of her hair and gave it a tug.
"Really? You couldn't think of anything better?"
"Like what? Telling them that I'm a cat person? I decided that if I was going to lie to an entire caravan, it should be as outrageous and entertaining a lie as possible." Kleptus nodded and patted Waldo on the shoulder.
"That's good thinking. If you tell it with enough conviction, even the craziest story starts to make sense. Like telling a girl you spent that hour alone with her sister just talking."
"Darling," Alice continued tugging on her hair, "I think all this is a really bad idea. It might cause problems."
Waldo waved her concerns away.
"Oh, please. When has religion ever caused any trouble?"
Chapter 4. A Much Better Liar. A week had passed. The caravan master had informed him that they would arrive at Torikai tomorrow. Waldo was glad they had almost reached their destination. Starting tomorrow, he would be expected to be busy with things that mattered. Still, the time with the caravan had proved surprisingly enjoyable, and he was sure that with all the practice he'd improved as a liar. He finished up his evening meal and prepared for his nightly performance. The rest of the camp was seated around the cook fire waiting. Seven of them were in a row right up close to the flames. They were looking over at him expectantly. As he put his empty plate down and started to rise, Alice placed a hand on his shoulder.
"Darling, maybe you shouldn't. We'll be in the Golden City tomorrow. Do you really have to do this?"
He patted her hand.
"It's the last time, so why not? Besides, it's fun."
"Fun, right."
Alice sighed and let go. Waldo strolled over to his nightly spot before the fire. He placed both hands behind his head, palms out. "The love of Rabbit unto you." The seven people seated closest to him jumped to their feet and returned the gesture.
"And unto you as well,"
they chorused, and then sat back down.
"Brothers and sisters, tomorrow we arrive in Torikai. My duties will take me away from you, but never forget what I have taught you about the great Rabbit Kukukachu. He is a god of love and mercy, who believes in unity, justice, and peace, whom all members of my order serve. Always remember that the ways of Avalon are strange and enigmatic. Even if a white mage pretends ignorance of the great rabbit, or even denies his very existence, know there is a reason. Never question our methods, for we plot to take over the world in his name. Just know that whatever we say or do, there is always a hidden meaning to it. Trust in the wisdom and goodness of the great rabbit."
The seven followers nodded vigorously.
"Remember that anyone can be part of the great rabbit's herd. All that is required is that you love and follow him. He will watch out for you and for all the members of his herd. When you die, you will go directly to Rabbit Paradise, where there are no wolves or foxes, and you will spend eternity in peace, basking in the love of Kukukachu. Your joy will be eternal and absolute, and you will never again know sadness or pain."
"What about the gold and women?"
Cuthbert, one of the seven, asked. He had buck teeth and splotchy skin.
"Everyone in Rabbit Paradise gets their own castle, with piles of gold and servants, and six beautiful women to satisfy your every need."
"Last time you said there were 10,
Cuthbert told him.
Yes. I meant to say 10. It's definitely 10.
Behind him, Waldo could hear Alice groan.
"What do the women get?"
Gerda asked. She was a wagon driver, and the only other woman traveling with the caravan besides Alice. She was stout, with hips as wide as her shoulders, and another of his followers.
"The women all still get a castle, gold, and servants, but instead of other women, they each get 10 husbands, who will tell them how beautiful they are, extol the wonders of their breasts, never, ever call them fat, and hug them for as long as they want."
Gerda gave an ecstatic squeal.
"All the great rabbit asks in return for these blessings is that you love each other, work to fulfill his goal, taking over the world."
"How will we know what exactly he wants us to do?"
Darren asked. He was the head of the caravan's guards and had become the leader of the followers.
"Whatever is good for the herd is good for the great rabbit. Love and help each other. Spread his name and tell others of his greatness. Tell everyone that we white mages are his servants, and do everything in his name. Do this, and you will serve the great rabbit well."
Seven heads bobbed up and down.
"But also keep in mind that while the great rabbit is a god of love and mercy, he also has a practical side. His love is only for the herd. Those who reject him are pure evil. Kukukachu won't care what you do with people like that. If they get in the way of the great rabbit's work, or you don't like them, or they look different from you, or they have something you want, feel free to do whatever you like. For our God is merciful and just, but only to his herd."
Again, seven heads nodded up and down. The caravan master stood up and held up a cautious hand.
"Wait, Master Rabbit. You're not saying it's all right to attack other people just because they worship a different god, are you?"
Waldo sent the man a cold look.
"Are you questioning the teachings of Kukukachu?"
I'm just asking.
Waldo pointed at him and began to shout.
Blasphemer! Heretic! Betrayer! Liar! Molester of small children! Pig fucker! Rabbit eater! Anyone who challenges my religious beliefs can only be a monster!
Horace's jaw opened and closed in wordless confusion. The followers all turned furious gazes in his direction. The man quickly fled back to his wagon.
I am afraid that is the kind of bigotry and hatred you will face, Waldo continued. But don't let the doubts and questions of the unbelievers shake your faith. Always remember, you are right and they are wrong, and what they think doesn't matter.
Darren and the rest agreed completely. Waldo preached to them for about another hour before finally turning in.
"Congratulations, darling," Alice said inside the tent they shared. "You're a cult leader."
"I know," he answered with pride. "I wish there was some way I could tell Mother. Well, it'll make a delightful story when I get back home."
"I can't believe you're actually happy about tricking those poor people."
"Why wouldn't I be? I wanted to work on my lying, and I've definitely improved. I mean, could a poor liar convince 7 people to pledge their lives and their immortal souls to a rabbit?"
"You must be so proud," Alice said, voice thick.
"I am."
"And what happens when they start talking about all this to the people they meet in the city? They think this rabbit god is the god of the white mages. Don't you have enough trouble with them already?"
"Causing them trouble is exactly what I want. Anything I can do to damage their standing is good. If this embarrasses them at all, it was worth doing just for that."
"But what if it comes back to you, darling?" Alice asked worriedly. "Then my reputation will be made, and Mother will be really proud."
Alice gave a despondent sigh.
"Well, done is done, I suppose. But promise me one thing. Once we get to Torikai, you'll stop preaching about magical rabbits."
"You don't need to worry about that, Alice. Starting tomorrow, I'll be much too busy with real work to be a religious leader."
Alice rolled her eyes and lay down to go to sleep.
"I just hope none of this causes any problems for us later."
Waldo laughed as he got ready to go to sleep, too.
How much trouble could 7 people with a new religion possibly cause?
Early the following morning, the caravan came to a halt. Still miles short of Torikai, the gold road was jammed tight with wagons, carriages, and carts going in either direction. Seeing it would be faster to go the rest of the way on foot, Waldo and his party set off. As they were leaving, Darren and the other followers came to say farewell. Waldo placed his hands behind his head.
"The love of the rabbit unto you, and unto you as well," the 7 of them replied. "I wish all of you the very best," Waldo said. "And remember, no matter how many people may laugh or refuse to believe you, keep telling everyone about the great rabbit Cuckoo Cachoo, especially that we white mages serve him."
"We will, Master Rabbit," Darren said, as the others nodded.
"We will spread his truth to all the world."
"Good to know."
Waldo gave them a cheerful wave and set off down the road and past the wagons and horses stuck in place. He didn't bother to look back even once. Being a cult leader had been fun and definitely kept him from being bored. As Alice went with him, Kleptus, and Belle, she turned back for a moment. What she saw was Darren, Cuthbert, Gerda, and the others, all rooted to the spot staring at them. Darren's eyes were wide and unblinking, like a starving man staring at a table covered with food. When Alice looked away, she felt a little nervous. She reminded herself she would probably never see any of them again, so it didn't matter. When Master Rabbit was finally gone from sight, Darren spoke to the rest of his herd.
"The first thing we need to do is establish the church. Then we can begin spreading the word of Cuckoo Cachoo."
They all nodded. Chapter 5. The City of Fortune and Ruin. As Waldo and the rest of his party set out, he motioned Kleptus over.
"You go on ahead. As we discussed, you'll be on your own from now until I'm ready to leave. Check in with the Mouse's Ear Tavern every day. I'll leave a message for you when the time comes."
Waldo had spoken with Darren and the others quite a bit and learned a lot about Torikai. The Mouse's Ear was a popular drinking hole about a mile outside the Gold Wall. Kleptus rubbed his hands together.
Got it.
Do whatever you like and steal to your heart's content, but don't get caught. I've no use for an incompetent thief.
I know what I'm about. I used to run my own thieves' guild, remember?
Yes, it seemed a fine establishment. If you hadn't tried to kill me, it might still exist.
Kleptus sent him a hooded look, which Waldo ignored.
You don't need to worry. I'm the best at what I do.
Well, you're certainly competent, Waldo admitted. But the gold guards are said to be very good at dealing with thieves, and they have the help of a mage guild.
If you could make me invisible, that might make things easier.
Waldo shook his head. I'm not going to meet with you just to cast spells on you. If you don't think you can manage without being invisible, you're worthless to me.
I didn't say I need it, just that it would help.
Don't worry, I've been thieving since I was knee-high to a goblin.
That's good.
But keep in mind what will happen if you get caught.
I know.
Kleptus held out his right hand in front of himself, then brought his left swinging down towards the wrist.
Chop, chop.
That won't be the worst of it. If you get caught and lose your hand, I won't need your services anymore. So I won't have any reason to renew the Morio seal and your heart will explode.
Kleptus grimaced.
I'll keep that in mind. Since I'm leaving, could you do it now?
Certainly. Waldo waggled his fingers on both hands.
Estevet Morio.
There, now your heart will continue beating for 3 more days.
You won't forget to keep doing it every 3 days, will you? Sometimes I have to remind you.
Certainly not. And remember, you have no connection to me. Don't mention me to anyone, and absolutely do not try to get in touch with me. If you run into anyone from the caravan, tell them you've left my service.
I should be so lucky, he muttered.
Kleptus hurried ahead and was soon lost among the wagons and carriages. Alice walked at her husband's side.
Darling, is this really a good idea? Just letting him be on his own?
Don't worry. So long as he believes the seal is genuine, he won't abandon us.
That's not what I'm worried about. What if he gets in trouble? What if he gets caught?
Torikai may not be the greatest city in the world, but it's the richest. What's the point in having a thief if I'm not going to take advantage of him? And if he does get caught, anything he claims will sound like a desperate lie. A thief stealing on the orders of a white mage? A white mage traveling with a pair of great monsters? Who's going to believe that even for a moment?
Alice considered and gave an uncertain nod.
I suppose.
Waldo appeared to have no doubts at all and continued striding along the gold road. They had to walk another 2 miles before they even got in sight of the city. They topped a hill and finally saw Torikai. When Alice laid eyes on it, she literally gasped.
It's true. There's a wall made of gold.
It's an illusion, Alice, Waldo said, completely unimpressed. It's not real. She didn't seem to hear him.
It's shining so bright it's hard to look at.
She had to cover her eyes with a hand.
Volcanoes are much more beautiful, and they're real. Have you ever seen an eruption in the middle of the night? Utterly breathtaking.
She continued, still not seeming to hear him.
And look how huge Torikai is. I always thought Stratford was a big city. But you could fit 50 of them here. 100!
Most of the city was not enclosed inside the gold wall. Rather, it was surrounded for miles on all sides by tiny brown and gray buildings. A golden island in a sea choked with debris. A mountain of shit is still shit.
Bell let out a sudden giggle.
Good one, Martha.
Alice turned to Waldo.
How can you not be impressed?
He looked back at her in surprise.
Really? Would you be impressed by shit just because there was a whole mountain of it?
He started walking again. 6 roads led into Torikai, from 6 different directions, all of them converging at the wall. The city also had the mighty Akushnet River running through it. The Akushnet ran through most of the lands west of Torikai, and then went north until it emptied into the Storm Sea. There was a row of docks built just below the gold wall, with multiple boats tied alongside every single pier. Just as the roads leading to the city were filled with traffic, the river was lined with anchored boats waiting their chance to dock.
It was easy to see why Torikai was said to have anything and everything available for sale. The road had two deep sets of ruts carved into it. The line of wagons